Hello and welcome to your favorite bookish podcast, Fully Booked and Caffeinated. I'm Heather.
I'm Kelsey.
And today we will be discussing the festive romance novel, Kiss Her Once for Me by Alison Cochran. And that's right, I chose two Alison authors back to back.
You did. Is it spelled the same?
It is.
Oh, wow.
I was typing over my notes and I was like, oh, they're both named Alison.
Listen, long as it wasn't the same author 2 months in a row.
No, it wasn't. But I thought that that was funny and that I didn't notice it until I was typing my notes. But yeah. Anyways, what are you drinking today?
I actually have a festive drink. I have a cider donut flavored cider.
Okay.
It's festive.
It sounds delicious, actually.
It's by Hudson North. It's really good. It has like, you know, like the spiced notes that a cider donut has?
Yes.
It has that. It's very, very good.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've had any donut flavored ciders yet, but I've seen them.
Yeah. Well, they had a lot more this year because whenever I see them, I do pick them up.
Yeah.
But there were a couple to choose from this time. So I'll have to bring them to your house so you can try them.
Absolutely.
They're very delicious.
Sneak them into the movie theater on Thursday.
Don't tempt me with a good time.
No, if I drink while watching a movie in the dark theater, I'll fall asleep.
Oh, 100%. We're already going to be struggling to stay awake. Speaking of, what are you drinking?
I stopped today at Starbucks after work and got a iced caramel brulee latte with oat milk.
Okay.
I had to take a detour because there was an accident for the crossover to get to my street.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's like a million accidents nowadays, every day of my life. And so I called Eric and I was like, well, I have to go the long way, so I'm just going to swing by Starbucks. I was like, I might as well get coffee.
I mean, you deserved a little treat for the inconvenience.
Exactly. So he was like, all right, well, just get me something. So it's fine. I went to Starbucks and treated myself to a nice holiday coffee. I'm obsessed with them. I'm going to be so sad when they're gone.
I know.
This is literally my favorite time of year. I just like took a sip of it and was just instantly happy.
Well, I went on Nespresso's website and bought like 4 more sleeves of the peppermint coffee and the gingerbread coffee before they're gone. And I know it's not going to hit the same when I have it in January, but it's okay. I'm still going to enjoy it. Cheers.
So Alison Cochran is a former high school English teacher prior to becoming a current writer of queer love stories. This book itself actually won the Lambda Literary Award for Best LGBTQ Romance in 2023. She lives in Portland, Oregon, which is the location of this book. So it makes sense as to why there was so much information. With her two big dogs, her small wife, and a vast collection of brightly colored books.
Oh, that's so cute.
I know. And I'd like this blurb from her website, so I stole it. She says, my name is Alison Cochran, and I write happily ever afters for messy queer characters. My rom-coms exist at the intersection of fluffy escapism and realistic explorations of mental illness and neurodivergence. I believe everyone deserves to see themselves represented in romance novels.
Oh, I love that.
I love that too. So,
And it definitely is true for this book.
Oh, very, very, very true. So since we are no longer using Goodreads, I went to Storygraph. So now it's going to be our good old Storygraph description.
We're Storygraph girlies now.
Which realistically, I do like the app. We were just talking about it. Mm-hmm. Recording, and I like the little pie charts.
Yes, and also
I'm a visual person, so I actually really, really like that.
And also like the AI, which, you know, I hate AI, except when it's summarizing the Amazon reviews. The AI tells you like who the book would be good for, and
oh, nice.
Yeah,
see, I haven't delved into it as much as you have. So
yeah, we'll get used to it.
Yeah, but I like it so far. So 1 year ago, recent Portland transplant Ellie Oliver had her dream job in animation and a Christmas Eve meet cute with a woman at a bookstore that led her to fall in love over the course of a single night. But after a betrayal the next morning and the loss of her job soon after, she finds herself adrift, alone, and desperate for money. Finding work at a local coffee shop, she is just getting through the days until Andrew, the shop's landlord, proposes a shocking drunken plan, a marriage of convenience that will give him his recent inheritance and alleviate Ellie's financial woes and isolation. They make a plan to spend the holidays together at his family cabin to keep up the ruse. But when Andrew introduces his fiancée to his sister, Ellie is shocked to discover it's Jack, the mysterious woman she fell for over the course of one magical Christmas Eve the year before. Now Ellie must choose between the safety of a fake relationship and the risk of something real. Kiss Her Once for Me is the queer holiday rom-com that you'll want to cozy up with next to a fire.
Wow, I obviously did not read the summary because I was shooketh when Jack showed up. And it's right there in the summary.
It literally is right there in the summary.
I mean, obviously I knew she was going to show up at some point, but yeah. I didn't know she was going to be the sister.
Oh my God. That's actually shock value. 100% oh shock gosh. Value for you.
Oh, that's good. Wow, that's okay.
Okay, so our main character, Ellie Oliver, her life seemed to be going just according to her 10-year plan. She moved to Portland for her dream job as an artist for an animation studio, and for one magical day and night, she thought she found the woman of her dreams. Ellie meets Jack in a bookstore, sobbing over the fact that her mother ditched her on Christmas, and the two women spend a wonderful snowy day together that leaves Ellie feeling like she's fallen in love. Have you ever fallen in love in the span of 24 hours? Not even 20? Yeah, I guess it is kind of like 24 hours.
First of all, she was in love after an hour.
Literally. Literally. She's like drawing her hand.
Yeah, that's a no from me. And it was giving like you in the bookstore, you know? Mm. But okay.
So Ellie is actually demisexual and typically does not find an emotional or physical connection with anyone in just one day. So Ellie be shooketh because this doesn't happen for her. Basically, ever.
Mm-hmm.
So the two spend this wonderful day together. And it's so funny because throughout the course of her time with Jack on this first night or this first like day, she's always like, oh, like I don't sleep with anyone on like the first day. And, you know, we just met. We shouldn't be doing all these things together. And Jack's like, you got anything better going on? Because clearly you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And they just instantly bond. Which was nice, because you could tell that they're both completely different people.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
but they, like, balanced each other out, because completely. Ellie is such a planner and has a lot of anxiety, and Jack is just like, look at all the stuff we can do.
Yeah, and her like, big clunky truck named Jillian.
Oh, yes. I love that.
Which was funny, because the way that Jillian was spelled, I know that you listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't read it, but it was spelled like G-I-L-L-I-A-N.
Oh.
So as soon as I read it, I did like immediately think of like Gillian Anderson, mm-hmm. like the X-Files, and then like literally called that out in the book. I was like, I knew it. Because she's such, I feel like a lot of people have like girl crushes on her.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
just such, I love Gillian Anderson. She's wonderful. I've never watched the X-Files, but she was really good in Sex Education. I really liked her in that.
I watched her in some other true crime thing, and I loved her in it. Not true crime, like a scripted crime show.
I think I know what one you're talking about.
Yeah, I can't remember the name, but I loved her
in
it.
The Fall?
Yes.
Right? With the guy from Once Upon a Time, the sheriff, right? Wasn't Jamie Dornan in that? I think
so. Yes, yes, yes. Jamie Dornan was in it. Yes.
Never watched it, but I can tell you who's in what because I'm psychotic when it comes to.
It is good. You should watch it.
I do want to watch it. I do. It's one of those shows that's on my long, long laundry list of shows to watch. So the next morning, Ellie knows that this is just the person for her. And they have this wonderful, intimate moment together. And Jack goes to get into the shower. And there's a knock on her Airstream's door. And Ellie's like, confused, because obviously it's Christmas morning. And who would be there on Christmas morning? So she opens the door. And it's Jack's wife. So Ellie is like, huh? And her wife, whose name I don't even remember, and it's pointless. Claire?
Claire.
Claire. Clarence basically says, oh, like, we're married and you're kind of like a freebie for Jack to enjoy. I told her to go, like, get it out of her system or yada, 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 something along those lines. So Ellie's like, okay, cool. And she just completely, like, flees the scene and just completely ghosts Jack, never speaks to her again. But she can't stop ruminating and thinking about Christmas Eve with Jack. And then on top of that, she ends up losing her job at her, in quotation marks, dream company, because she clearly did not like her job there.
She just thought she was supposed to like it.
She was basically, like you said before, like a planner, and this is what she thought her life was supposed to be like, and this was the job she was supposed to have that she went to school for. So the fact that she loses it, she loses her job and Jack within the span of, like, only a few months. So, heartbreak for her. Now it's present day Christmas Eve, and Ellie is working at a coffee shop that she hates with a boss that she loathes. The boss sounds like horrible. Yeah. And like I said, she just can't forget last Christmas Eve. No matter how hard she tries, she has a leech of a mother who constantly badgers her for money while Ellie is barely making ends meet herself, and she's basically on the verge of destitution and has no idea how she's going to survive. But her mom calls and is like, oh, my car broke down. Can you Venmo me that $200, like, now? Like, can you imagine?
Her mom is horrible.
Horrible. Complete leech, terrible human being. There's just a lot of terrible human beings that she's surrounded by currently.
And it's because she basically is keeping this running tab and thinks that Ellie has to pay her back for every cent that she spent on her as her mother.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
Basically. So, love that. Clearly, she was meant to be a mother.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ellie is just super, super depressed. She really needed that promotion at work that she's clearly not getting. And she doesn't know what her next move is going to be, how she's going to make rent. She's very stressed out.
Wait, it was so weird that she even thought she was getting this promotion, because all her boss does is, like, berate her. She was, like, 4 minutes late because the middle of a snowstorm, and he was like...
I was going to bring that up.
You're so unreliable, blah, blah. And then she's like, okay, so anyway, can I have a promotion, please? And he's like, no. It's so weird.
So rude. So enter Andrew Kim Prescott, the gorgeous and wealthy landlord of the coffee shop, who basically offers a proposition to Ellie that she just can't refuse. Marriage of convenience. So Andrew's grandfather added a stipulation to his will that requires Andrew to be married in order to receive his inheritance. However, Andrew has no interest in being in a relationship, so he's looking for someone to marry him for the year, just so he can get the money, and he offers Ellie $200,000 if she will help him and marry him, as well as spend Christmas with his family at their cabin in the mountains.
I think she was in a bargaining position, and she should have asked for at least 25%.
I agree with that 100%.
And she should have agreed quicker. Because I would have been like, yes.
I know. So she's not particularly interested in Andrew. Like, she definitely thinks he's hot.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell, like, she gets annoyingly hot. She gets, like, flustered, like, when he comes into the coffee shop. Yeah. And
it's like when you see just, like, a perfectly sculpted human and you're like, oh, they're so hot.
Exactly.
Like, it's annoying.
Basically. But she's desperate for money. And she thinks that there may be a chance that feelings could grow between them. So my favorite thing happens that I love, and this is not the first time that I've seen this concept, but they create a napkin contract during a drunken agreement in a bar. And I love that.
I feel like there were so many rom-com cliches stuffed into this book.
100%. This is definitely the definition of a rom-com. 100%. Mm-hmm. What did you think about this proposition?
I mean, I thought it was a little crazy that it was literally the first time they hung out. But I mean, as I said, I would be agreeing real quick, especially if I was in Ellie's position.
Oh, yeah.
But it just so seems not her.
No.
At all.
Mm-mm. No. So it's kind of, it's interesting to see her kind of go outside of the box for her.
Yeah. And it's like, it's kind of speaking to her desperation because she kind of did all this like with her subconscious because she was blacked out. And it's something she would never do when she's sober.
No, considering that she's a planner.
And she's obsessed with other people's opinions of her.
Yeah.
So I don't think she would ever do anything where she had to lie or had to, like, put on a fake face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And this isn't something that would ever factor into her 10-year life. And, you know, now she's just here engaged to this super wealthy guy that she barely knows. So she has to, like, learn all about him on, like, the drive up to his family's cabin. So the big reveal of the book that you had no idea was coming, which makes it even funnier. So Andrew and Ellie arrive at the family home for the holiday, and Ellie discovers that, lo and behold, Andrew's sister, Jacqueline, is none other than Ellie's Jack from Christmas Eve. Both women are basically stunned, but when they first see each other in the house, Ellie gets the vibe that Jack just doesn't remember her at all because she has no, there's no signs of recognition and she doesn't act like she knows Ellie. Like, she plays it very, like, cool and calm. Like, oh, hey, like, nice to meet you. But realistically, Jack does remember Ellie and she's stunned to know that she's engaged to his brother, to her brother. And so now Ellie is in a pickle because she can't tell Andrew that she slept with his sister. And Andrew made it very clear that Ellie could not tell anyone about the fake inheritance scheme. And she desperately needs that money because it'll change her life. And then on top of that, it becomes very clear to Ellie that Andrew is in love with Jack's best friend, Dylan. So the four of them are in, as Ellie dubs it, a love trapezoid, which I loved this reference. This was the perfect way to describe it. And so quirky, which is perfect because all these characters are so quirky.
Yes. And it's funny because she refers to it like that over and over in her head. And then one time when she's talking to Andrew and she just, like, blurts it out.
Yeah.
I love, like, what? She's like, you know, the trapezoid thing. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. Because it's just like an inner monologue that she keeps like saying to herself. The whole meeting of the family, I was obsessed with because I love the entire family. The grandmas, the drunk and stoned grandmas. Like,
obsessed with the grandmas. With them.
I love the mom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like she's probably demure, but she's so open-minded and just such a good mom. The dad's obviously a dick, and he barely makes an appearance in the book. And when he does, his character is terrible and a dick, like I said. But all the other family, I, like, love. And I love that Jack's friend Dylan, they are always just there for all the holidays and just a part of the family too.
And so comfortable, like, talking shit and wearing inappropriate clothing all this stuff.
I know. They wore such great inappropriate holiday sweaters. Very much something you would do. Like 100%.
Yes.
And the love trapezoid is just fantastic. And it's so crazy to me that Jack just never notices that Andrew and Dylan are, like, hot for each other.
Because Ellie knew immediately.
I know.
And she's like, every time I'm even in the room with them, it's uncomfortable because there's so much sexual tension.
I know. So it's like, how does Jack just not even, like, sense that? And then I also love that Dylan's job is, like, an elementary school teacher. Never would have seen that coming. They're so inappropriate.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I love it. And they're also so apprehensive about Ellie because they're obviously, like, in love with Andrew. So they're kind of like, we were just hooking up, like, only a few months ago, and now all of a sudden Andrew's engaged to you?
Yeah.
Like,
and Andrew so clearly doesn't want a relationship.
Yeah.
And if Andrew did want a relationship, then Dylan and Andrew would be together.
100%.
Because what I really liked is that the thing keeping them apart isn't the fact that Dylan is trans or any of that. Like, Andrew's like, no, of course my family wouldn't care about that. And that's such like a tired cliche. So I'm glad that that wasn't in here.
Me too. I like that a lot. That's what I said before. Like, I feel like it's a very open-minded family. Which is nice.
Besides the dad. But he sucks.
Yeah. The dads always fucking suck, though. Like, that's nothing new. So the connection between Jack and Ellie has clearly never gone away. And they find being around each other every day to just be incredibly difficult. It's so funny seeing Ellie's inner monologue during these moments when she's alone in a room with Jack, because she's like obsessed with Jack's body, and she's like, those arms. She's like a very stocky woman, and Ellie is obviously super attracted to that. She wears like Carhartt jackets and flannels, but she's not like, she like, doesn't like,
she
go
does
outside
it because it's
and,
a
like,
trend in
yeah
Portland.
Exactly, like she's not like a lumberjack, like she's not. So I really loved Ellie's thoughts and like her opinions of Jack. They were cute. I almost wish that we had POV from Jack too sometimes, just to see like what she thought of Ellie. But you get the gist from it, realistically. So during the present time chapters, we get flashback scenes of that one night they had together on Christmas Eve, because Ellie has written an online platform of this story. So the one thing about Ellie is that she is obviously such a creative soul, and this is actually what her creative outlet should have always been, instead of animation. She does draw still, but it's more like graphic novelesque, and that's what she should truly be doing. And so she writes this, oh god, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like Snowy Day or something.
Yeah,
like
I think
that.
It's called Snow Day.
Snow Day. Close enough.
But then there's another one that's called something else.
Yeah, The Arrangement.
Yes.
And okay. Another one that's like really melancholy and like depressing. But she like basically, in order to kind of process that experience, she writes it out, and it gets a lot of attention. And so it was interesting. It was a fun way for us as the reader to get to experience that day that Ellie had with Jack.
And also her success, because even though she has a lot of people interested in it, and she says that kind of offhandedly, I feel like she doesn't see it as a valid medium or a valid career. Like,
no,
to her, it's just this.
It's just for fun. It's almost it's almost like she's on a fan fiction website and just writing her feelings down.
Yeah. So it's like she never thinks that anything could come of it, because she doesn't think that anyone would care about that much, even though people are obviously caring about it.
Yeah. It's like it more or less is the equivalent of like a fan fiction. It's clear that both women are hurt and still missing what they thought could have been a true future between the two of them. Because Ellie comes to realize that Jack thinks that Ellie ghosted her and has no idea why she just fled, because Jack was also very much heavily interested in Ellie, because in that one day they had together, it was said multiple times that they felt like they knew each other forever. Like, it wasn't like they had just only met that day. It was like an instantaneous connection. And there was no awkwardness truly between them. So Jack also really was into Ellie. And so then Ellie finally kind of has to admit, like, oh, I left because, like, your wife showed up.
Yeah. It's, like, such a miscommunication, which if I was Ellie, I would have waited for Jack to get out of the shower and been like, what the fuck?
This is one of my qualms about Ellie, is that she very much, which I'll get to, but, like, she very much just thinks the negatively about everything, which has a lot to do with her upbringing and everything. So she just immediately, instead of trying to figure out what was happening, or like you said, confront Jack and be like, what the fuck? I didn't know that you were married. I would have never done X, Y, and Z had I known this. She just flees the scene of the crime.
And she's also super judgy. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, because, like, we're all judgy. But just the way that she talks about, what's her name? Ari?
Yes.
The way she talks about Ari, Andrew, all of them. And then just the fact that she already had it in her head that Jack was the type of person who wouldn't want something serious. because, you know, she wasn't a planner and they just had this like crazy day. So she's like, oh, of course I'm just a one night stand.
Yeah. She kind of just like makes up this assumption about Jack without actually asking her what her feelings are. And then Jack like says her and Claire are married. Claire wanted like a poly relationship. So she wanted to see other people. So when Claire kind of makes that comment to Ellie, it was more like, oh, I wanted Jack to try this to like see what it's like. But Jack realizes that she's a monogamous kind of girl and she doesn't want to share her partner with anybody. She wants to be with only one person.
Which is another thing that I liked, because even though Jack is obviously comfortable in her sexuality and in her skin and all this stuff, it's like she felt weird about the fact that she wanted a monogamous relationship. She's like, oh, the queer thing to do is to have a poly relationship. Exactly. And I didn't want that. And I felt like I was weird for not wanting that.
Yeah, 100%. And one of the things I like about Ellie and Jack is I like who Ellie becomes when she's around Jack. She becomes like this entirely different person. And this, there's just something about Jack's presence that brings this side of Ellie out, which I almost wish we saw more of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of my favorite scenes with them is when they're snowed in at that cabin together they broke into. And then you kind of have this role reversal where, because throughout the entire book, you definitely feel like Jack is the dominant and Ellie's the submissive. But in this role reversal, when they're in the when they are in their most intimate moments together, Jack becomes like submissive and Ellie becomes the dominant. And there was just this sexiness about Ellie and who this new persona was when she gets to be in control. Mm-hmm. And like, I really wish we saw more of that from her.
100%. She's never in control in her daily life. And I agree. I wish that some of the flashbacks, instead of it just being all the thoughts running through Ellie's head of like, oh my God, I love her. Oh my God, I love her. I wish that it was actually more about their interactions at all these places that they went on the longest day in history.
I know, because it was actually kind of interesting to see this choice from the author that Ellie is this dominatrix in like a sense, because you never would expect that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked it. You know, and even like, and I also really liked how tasteful like the spice was in this, because there was, it was so funny because I said to Eric, he was like, oh, you read like a romance, like was it steamy? And I was like, no, I was like, it was one pepper. And he's like, because you see like on like everything, how readers rate like the romance novels of like the peppers. Like, no, it was only one pepper.
It was. But the one scene, and okay, so we've talked about this before, how it's hard to listen to spicy books. So I listened to this. But I, because it was only the one scene and it was tasteful, I thought it was hot. Tasteful. I was like, damn.
No, like, I know exactly. Like, I felt the same way. And it was, I'm almost glad that it wasn't super vulgar, because I think that that wouldn't fit with this book at all.
Yeah. I don't think it would fit with Ellie's personality.
No.
Or just, the whole vibe. I agree.
But yeah, I really like their relationship together. They're an interesting dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to just get over this fact that Ellie kept referring to, like, how in love she was and how it was, like, the best day of her entire life.
You're also not, like, a hopeless romantic, so I can understand, too, how this could be, like, a little hard for you to...
Yeah, I'm too much of a cynic concept. To ever
Yeah, the concept here. Is not realistic to you. You're like, sure.
I was like, sounds like you had fun, but I don't know about love.
Love.
That she can't even stop thinking about every second of every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Another thing that I loved was that all the scenes of Ellie with the entire family were just so wholesome and cute. And she finds this family to be, like, the most lovely and welcoming family, which is something that she's never experienced, because her parents were basically absentee parents. Ellie Moore basically, like, raised herself. And she started drawing in school and garnished attention from teachers and other students and finally found a place of belonging. And so this is realistically the only besides her relationship with her best friend, who Meredith sounds maybe correct.
Meredith.
It was an M name.
Yeah.
But regardless. So her best, you know, her relationship with her friend is kind of the only real connection she has. So when she's with this loving family who accept her fully, it's finally a feeling of belonging for her. And it kind of puts her in this weird situation because she's stuck with deciding whether she needs to stick with her bargain and, like, the safety of the deal with Andrew, or decide if she's willing to take a chance on love and happiness with the future with Jack. But either way, she feels like she's gonna betray this entire family.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves them so much. And so, like, it kind of, like, sucks.
And it's also, well, I looked it up, it is Meredith.
Cool.
It's also another instance where her expectations or her views were completely proven wrong. Like,
yeah,
she expects, oh, they're rich, so when they decorate the tree, it's going to be tasteful and, you know, all like gold, you know what I mean? Like rich people trees. But then it's, you know, it's handmade ornaments, mm-hmm. and it's from when they were kids, and every ornament has a story, and she's just so pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
And the crazy part is that when she's thinking of it, just like you said, it's either this contract with Andrew, mm-hmm. or take a chance with Jack. But I feel like she's leaving out this really big part that all of a sudden the family is just going to be like, okay, we forgive you for the whole contract thing, but now we want you to be happy with Jack. Like, it's just so, it's too much in one family.
I know. But I really, you know, I love sometimes when you read these romance novels, especially like the quirky ones like these, because I feel like sometimes I have read some where they're extremely overdone, but this was like the perfect cherry on top. This family was wonderful,
mm-hmm.
and I loved them so much. A big theme of the story is Ellie's generalized anxiety and her fear of failure. So she, like I said, she grew up in a very disruptive, toxic family. And she experienced a lot of uncertainty growing up. So she needs plans and she needs structure. And she's generally risk averse. Mm-hmm. She kind of like avoids anything that she can't control, like we said. Like she can't, that isn't part of what she's expecting her life to be.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so hard for her to pivot when she loses her quote unquote dream job, because she can't figure out how to work a new plan when mm-hmm. that first plan doesn't work out.
Yeah. And this reoccurring theme of failure in every situation was a little overdone and frustrating at times, especially after she sleeps with Jack again, because in that moment she was so sure that I'm going to be with Jack, I'm going to break off this contract with Andrew, like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And then the next morning she completely freaks the fuck out. And just changes her mind. And Jack's like, you know, no. And then so she kind of has to like talk Ellie off this ledge, because Ellie is convinced that Jack doesn't care for her and is going to leave her and that they're never going to work together, blah, blah, blah. And so it's just frustrating.
Yeah, and
you finally feel like in that moment when they have that intimate time in the cabin that Ellie's finally discovering that this is what she deserves. And then it's kind of like, oh, no, she's back to being
stupid. Mm-hmm. And you get random little comments from Jack that show you that it's not fair to her, because she thinks that Ellie ghosted her. So she already is doubting Ellie's feelings.
Yeah.
And then when she has to constantly convince her that things are real and all this stuff, it's like she's showing that vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ellie's like kind of shitting on it because she can't get out of her own head.
Yeah, exactly. And then by the end of the book, like Ellie does finally begin to understand that the perfection that she is constantly seeking out is what's actually holding her back from being her true self and having that happiness. And so like, you know, the pendulum moment of the book is they're leaving the cabin. Ellie gets an email that some editor found her story online. loved it, wants to have like a meeting with her, wants her to write for what was like a magazine or something, or like a online platform. And so she tells Jack, and like Jack's so happy for her, and you know, they're walking back to the Camp Prescott's house, and Ellie realizes that no, like she needs to break things off with Andrew. She needs to be honest with Andrew. You know, Andrew should be with Dylan. This is just this contract between them needs to be null and void. Like it needs to stop. And so she tells Andrew this, and Andrew doesn't realize that Ellie wasn't honest with Jack about the situation, and Andrew knows how kind of hard-headed Jack is, because the whole reason why Andrew wants his inheritance is because Jack was written out of the will, and she's trying to open up a bakery, or she did open a bakery, and he's afraid that she kind of had to take out all this money for this business, and she doesn't have a backup if it fails, because she thinks she has an inheritance coming from the grandfather, and she doesn't. So the biggest reason why he even wants his inheritance this badly is for like a good reason. He wants to help his sister, but he knows who his sister is as a person, and that she's going to be pissed when she realizes the reason for why all this is happening. And so he's like, oh God, we have to like go tell her now. Mm-hmm. And then they come out into the living room, and you can just feel like a pin drop. Like it was like, oh no. And because Jack was so excited about this story that this editor found, and when she reads it, it's the story that Ellie had posted about this marriage of convenience proposition. And so Jack's like, is this true? Like, is that what's happening right now? And Ellie has to be like, yeah.
Which also, Ellie, it's the internet, honey.
I know.
That shit is not a secret.
No.
You're not supposed to tell anyone. Yeah. And you posted that shit on the interwebs.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So here we have, like, the what is considered the third act breakup. Because now, again, Jack and Ellie are kaput. Jack wants nothing to do with her. This is now the second time that Ellie has broken her trust. And Ellie is devastated. You know, she's feels a lot of vulnerability in this moment, because not only did she disappoint Jack, but she disappointed Jack's family, who she really, really cares for. So it's kind of like a very much like, oh shit moment for Ellie, and kind of like a light bulb goes off of her head. Like she needs to stop feeling so sorry for herself and stop thinking that she's gonna screw everything up. And it's nice because she has, like, Meredith to fall back on. And then she has this newfound relationship with Ari that she met at the coffee shop. And I love that, too, because Ari's like, no, I'm your best friend. And Ellie's like, no, you're not. But
she's like,
you are.
I'm your best friend. And then what she says to Meredith, she's like, I'm your best friend. She won't say it. But also, I really liked that Meredith called her out and was like, you're absorbed in your own quote-unquote failure, which isn't a failure, that you're not even paying attention to the fact that I just spent all this money to come see you. Mm-hmm. I put my life on hold to fly out here. I have been going through a lot of shit in my personal life that you haven't even asked about. Mm-hmm. And it's kind because, of like,
because Ellie has such this big fear of failure that Meredith's even scared to tell her anything, because she knows that Ellie's going to kind of have like an existential crisis about it. So it's really nice, because then Ellie finally comes to this realization that she needs to change her ways. She tells her mom off, which is, like, wonderful. Finally sets some boundaries, which is what she should have done from the beginning. Mm-hmm. But,
and what a fucking monster, her mom. Like, she's such... I mean, we've been talking about narcissists so much recently.
I know.
But she's so clearly a narcissist. Uh-huh. And when Ellie sets one simple boundary, she just completely cuts her out.
Which is, like, insane.
It's disgusting.
She's not even like a good, she's never was a good mom to Ellie, and she's not a good role model. So it's a surprise that Ellie even turned out as wonderful as she is, being raised by shit parents. I guess she has the drawing to thank for that, because she found like a community in that. You look out of artistic souls. They always find a way to come
seriously
through.
Seriously.
You know?
Hmm.
But I love this whole, the last two or three chapters were, like, my favorite of the book. Because then you have Ellie, who moves in with Ari and all her roommates, you know, and then Andrew ends up coming back into her life and he realizes that he kind of fucked up by coming up with that plan and everything and apologizes and he like won't take no for an answer from Ellie about like being in her life. He's very much like, no, like we're friends now. And also now he's dating Dylan and they're finally together. And I love Andrew and Dylan. They're like so funny. And I love like the sexual tension between them throughout the book. It was so funny. Like their hands touch and they're like.
Yes. And I loved how obvious it was. But then the fact that shit hits the fan. Mm-hmm. Ellie, you know, retreats back to her sad cave.
Yeah.
And has to like rebuild her life. And mm-hmm. meanwhile, Andrew's just like, so anyway, now I'm happy with Dylan. Mm-hmm. Everything's going great. Sorry, I forgot to call you. But like,
I know
my family's cool with me, so.
I know. And then there's just kind of like this trickling in of the Kim Prescott family. And Andrew says how his mom finally is divorcing his dad and how it's like weird, but his mom deserves better. And then there's kind of like you get like this look into Ellie's past few months and Catherine comes over to have like dinner with her and they just drink wine together. She gets invited to things with the grandmas. But she doesn't have any communication with Jack. Like, she hasn't talked to Jack since that last night at the cabin. And Jack is having a soft opening for her bakery, which was called the Butch Oven, which I loved so much.
So cute.
Mm-hmm. So clever. And I hope that's, like, a real thing. If not, especially in Portland.
It would be in Portland.
I hope it's, like, a real bakery. Or became one after reading this book. And Andrew's like, you have to, like, you should come. You know, it says it's open to all. And Ellie's like, is it open to all, though? Like, will I be welcome? And Andrew's like, yes, like, you know, come. And so, of course, she's like, fine. And so she shows up to the soft opening, super, super nervous. And Jack sees her and Ellie's like, those arms, though.
Seriously.
And then she, like, has the typical movies romantic speech. I love you. I'm sorry. Like, blah, blah, blah. And she, like, completely is vulnerable with Jack in this moment. And she's, I don't know exactly what she expected the outcome to be, but you have to assume that Ellie was a little hopeful that it would be, mm-hmm. like, reciprocated. And Jack's just like, no. And so it's like embarrassing because this is in front of all like Jack's friends and family. And Ellie's like, all right, I'm gonna see myself out. Like, sorry. And so now she's beating herself up because now she really did fail. Mm-hmm. And she finally was all open and honest with Jack about her feelings. And she's kicking rocks outside.
And it's so hard because the reason she's so hopeful is because she knows that she's on the path to improving her life. And she's, mm-hmm. you know, feeling so much better about herself and making all these changes. But how would Jack know that? Mm-hmm. There's no way for her to know that.
No.
And it's like, she says, you know, I was prepared to be humiliated as long as I spoke the truth and said my true feelings, which I really liked.
Me too. I don't think she was expecting that level of humiliation. So that was kind of like,
But Jack was like, that was so embarrassing for you.
Loved that so. That was so funny.
Me too. She's like, no, that was so embarrassing. And Ellie's like, I'm sorry. She's like, no, for you. Wow. Yeah, so embarrassing for you.
But like, of course, Jack follows her out. And then they end up on the bridge where they, like, you know, where that first night on Christmas Eve happened. And Jack reciprocates the feelings, and so of course they end up together happily ever after.
Never saw it coming.
Well, you didn't know that Jack was a sister, so how would you?
I didn't even know that we were reading a romance. I had no idea what we were doing.
Yes, you knew it was a winter romance. Don't lie to me. But yeah, I think one of my favorite things about this book was just the queerness of it all. It was so queer. And I loved it so much.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved it.
And I loved that they were dealing with real issues that you'd have in a queer romance. And real Ellie was confident in her sexuality also, but still, like, her first time approaching someone and asking their pronouns, her first time, like, realizing, oh, in Portland, this is how things are and stuff like that. So it really felt like it wasn't just gay to be gay.
No, and being someone that's not queer, I really liked reading this because I feel like I learned so much. Like, it was almost, like, educational in some weird sense. You know what I mean?
Because there's so many different, like, facets. And
I know, and it was just, it was so, and it was, like you said, like, it was such a breath of fresh air because there wasn't any negative tones to the queerness.
The fact that even though the dad was a horrible piece of shit, it never came across that he cared that Jack was gay, that, like, he didn't care about any of that.
No.
Which was also good, because he is, you know, portrayed as this, like, really shitty, horrible father. But that's not his issue, and that's good.
But I low-key wonder if, like, the grandpa was, had issues with it. Because especially, like, putting the stipulation in the will that Andrew, like, had to be in a relationship before he could get it. The fact that he wrote Jack out of the will.
And the fact that everyone called him a piece of shit.
Yeah. You know, whether it be because he thought that she was lazy, but it's almost have to wonder, like, oh, was he actually doing it because he didn't like that his granddaughter was a lesbian? You know? Like, you kind of almost get, like, that little bit of an undertone. Like, maybe there was something more than what we weren't being told.
Yeah, so I agree with that.
But I liked it. I liked that part about it at all. About it. I liked all, like, the... And all just in general, all the relationships. Like, I love that the two grandmas that dated the same dude were just, like, besties. I love that. The grandmas were my favorite.
And even when the one grandma, I can't remember which one, when she had the conversation with Ellie, because she knew about the will, and she's like, girl, why are you crying? Yeah. I know that's why you're getting married. Don't worry about it. And Ellie was like, what? And the grandma didn't care. She was just like, no. I get it. Whatever.
Yeah, she's like, how long have you been in love with my granddaughter? And she's like,
She's like, what now?
Don't you mean your grandson? Yeah, it was great. It was really good. I liked it. It was very much like a very, and I mean this in, like, the nicest way possible, just like a very basic romance. Like, there wasn't any, I feel like the other romance novels we read on here were more, like, complex.
I agree. This one was so
sweet and, like, cutesy.
And it was, I mean, we said it before, it was every cliche rom-com thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, the siblings, the marriage of convenience, the money, the, just so much of it.
I know.
All packed in there.
And a nice little Christmas present. And it was so Christmassy and cute.
It was very Christmassy.
Yeah. I liked that. I feel like that's, like, my vibe for the rest of the month. I just want to read, like, Christmas rom-coms. But yeah, it was good. So my rating scale is out of blue scarves.
Oh, I forgot about the blue scarf.
Because we have, like, a Taylor Swift moment here. Because Jack kept her scarf that she left in the Airstream. I was like, oh, I'm like, this is all too well.
But Ellie's happy about it as opposed to being sad about it.
I know.
Yeah, so I liked the scarf.
How many blue scarves did you give this?
I gave it 3.5 blue scarves. I really liked the characters. I liked Andrew, Ari, Ellie, Jack. I liked all, and the grandmas. I loved them. But it was just a little too cheesy for me. And I feel like comparatively to the other romances that we've read that were just so much more complex and just it all felt kind of surface level. You know what I mean? Like the stakes weren't high enough.
Yeah. I can really get that.
So I liked it, but it was just a little, it was exactly what it was. It was a Christmassy, cutesy rom-com. So I enjoyed it, but I definitely wouldn't say it's my favorite. I would still recommend it though.
I would 100%. It's definitely like, I feel like this is a good palate cleanser book.
Yes.
Like if you're kind of like in between heavy books or you don't know what you want to read and you want to read something Christmassy and cute that doesn't make you think too much, I think that this is perfect. But I also gave it 3.5 stars. Because I agree. It was definitely a little far-fetched. But still very cute and wholesome. And really nothing too negative about it.
Mm-hmm.
I like her writing. I would read her other books. She has a couple other queer novels that I want to read as well. So, I think this was her second one.
Okay.
Not her debut.
Shocker. Go us.
I know. But it was a really fun read. And I'm really glad I chose this.
Yeah, this was a very good pick, especially considering how heavy our reading material has been.
I know. That's what I was thinking, too. I was like, I like that we're going to end the year on, like, a lighthearted note.
Mm-hmm.
All things considered.
My eye twitch will never go away.
No, not for the next 4 years. And maybe more after that.
Maybe more.
Anyway, well, that's all we have for you today. If you like what you heard, please make sure to follow, subscribe, and rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen to. If you have any book recommendations or questions for us, you can email us at fullybookedcafpod@gmail.com. Also, be sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram at fullybookedcafpod to see our upcoming reads. Thanks for checking us out, and remember,
if you need us, we're fully booked. Bye.
Bye.